this is just a bailout with a different name. They call it a repo loan, but what it is a bailout, and it's happening, I think, right in front of us. Right. So whatever the amount is, there's more demand for the cash, more need for the liquidity than there is the ability by the Fed to provide it at this point, which is even slightly more alarming. JP Morgan is without question the biggest manipulator on the market. They have amassed the largest physical position the world has ever seen. And for whatever reason, even though the Justice Department is pointing a finger at them, they have still been able to continue to manipulate the market through all of this. And so I think that the big money, the last thing they want to do is be forthright about what's really happening until they've positioned themselves. They've positioned themselves out of the dollar.
After too much procrastination, finally the shop is up on sarahwestell.com with all of my favorite products and affiliates. Between this and Patreon donations, I can keep providing you with important independent reporting and interesting interviews. Products available include the skincare products I personally use, hemp oil infused with C60 serum and Defy Times TAM serum. Also, Tetragen's amazing weight loss product that gives you an industry-first money-back guarantee because they know it works. Please visit my shop to support independent journalism and to get the absolute best products on the market. Also, for a limited time, be sure to download the free ebook, Water, How Water Connects All Living Things. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have Andy Shechtman coming back to the program. He is the president of Miles Franklin, and we are going to talk about the craziness that's going on in the global economy and here in the United States. We're going to talk about the repo loans, but he calls them bailouts. That's what it is. They're just flat out bailouts, and now they're doing the bailouts for 2 weeks. And they're also talking about quantitative easing, and they're talking about extending it all the way out to forever, essentially. Second quarter, who knows when they're going to quit doing it. We're going to talk about that. And then he's going to talk about Basel III. He thinks it's the biggest thing that's ever hit the economy in his whole lifetime. And it is essentially pulling governments out of the dollar. He's going to explain how that is essentially repositioning the entire world and what that means. And then we're going to talk about how to prepare, because this is not stable times. We're going to be honest here. This is 2008, except they're doing it silently. And people need to know what's really going on. And then we're going to talk, for my patrons, we're going to talk about the central bank and the Fed and the likelihood of being able to remove the Fed and how important it is to remove the Fed and audit the Fed. And so we have a conversation about that. Anybody who has been studying the Federal Reserve knows that it's a private institution owned by people we don't even know who it's really owned by, and it's never audited. So, I mean, how can you have somebody that controls our money who we don't even know who owns it and it's never audited? I mean, it's just so crazy. So we're going to talk about that and discuss how harmful that is for a country, and whether are they putting our needs first or are they putting the needs of their own? The other big people with big money ahead of the needs of this country. And I think it's pretty self-explanatory, and we're going to talk about that. So you can get that on my Patreon, and I have the link below. But we are going to talk about a lot of important things today in this interview. So hold on to your hats, buckle up, and we are going to talk with Andy Shechtman about what's really going on. Hi, Andy. Welcome back to the program.
Always good to see you, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
Well, we need your wisdom to help us figure out what's really going on in these markets, because it's just crazy, as everyone is observing. I mean, we're seeing the Federal Reserve infusing money into the banks with this repo loans and now these two-week loans. Can you talk about what's going on and what you see as far as the Federal Reserve and the activities now that they're engaging in?
Yeah, these repo loans are very reminiscent of the crash that we saw in 2008. They are banks that are starved for capital and are in need of capital every single evening to the point of loans that are in excess of $200 billion with a B per evening to allow some solvency for some of these banks. The reasons why and who is borrowing it are still up in the air. But I guess if I had to guess, I would say a lot has to do with the derivative books of these banks. There's so much happening right now. For example, Brexit. Is Brexit going to happen or is Brexit not going to happen? Or the Chinese trade deal. Is it going to happen or is it not going to happen? And the volatility that we're seeing is wreaking havoc, I believe, on the derivative books of these banks. And they are in a cash crunch, no question about it. When you see these overnight repo loans many, many times, 2.5 times oversubscribed, to me, this is just a bailout with a different name. They call it a repo loan, but what it is a bailout. And it's happening, I think, right in front of us right now with greater demand than there is a willingness to loan the money at this point. I think it's very concerning, very alarming.
Well, what about the fact that now they've started these 2-week loans, 2-week bailouts, if you will? I mean, that's a bigger deal than just an overnight.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The longer the term, the greater the concern. And these loans, it's important to realize that these loans are exchanging of collateral as well. Typically, the collateral that they use are U.S. Treasuries, where they got into trouble in 2008. Is that what they were calling collateral were these toxic subprime loans. But suffice it to say, what's happening with these loans is that they're actually exchanging collateral in case one of the counterparties goes belly up. So it's a situation where it's not just making a loan willy-nilly, it's making a loan and receiving collateral because I think there's genuine concern. Counterparty risk is a big concern when we talk about the derivative market, the ability for the counterparty to be able to make good. And when you see these loans coming out of nowhere with full description, but yet little evidence as to who and why, to me, it's very eye-opening and very concerning. And I think it's probably the beginning of what could be a very, very tumultuous last few weeks of the year, no question about it.
Yeah, it's quite crazy. Now, these 2-week temporary loans, do you know or have any information on how large those loans are? Because I can imagine those are even larger.
No, I don't. I don't know exactly what the numbers are, but if they're anything like the overnight loans, you're getting up into the $200, $250 billion range. So I don't know what they are, but I'm assuming that they're significant enough to certainly be noticed, no question about it. But again, remember, these repo loans were 2.5 times oversubscribed. So whatever the amount is, there's more demand for the cash, more need for the liquidity than there is the ability by the Fed to provide it at this point, which is even slightly more alarming.
Oh, yeah, that's even more crazy. Well, they were talking about ending it, October 21st or some date like that, and now they've pushed it out to second quarter 2020. To me, that's just like saying pushing it out indefinitely when you're pushing it out, you know, that far. And they pushed it out that far, plus added the 2-week loans, and now they're talking about quantitative easing. So
on top of their open market operations, which just goes flat out and buys the bonds. So, you know, there's no question about it that they are trying to get in front of this problem now rather than let it become a big issue like it did in 2008 when you saw a couple of the biggest banks in the world go under. So I think they're trying to get in front of it right now. And it's interesting, they come up with names like QE or a repo loan or whatever the names are that kind of hide the real meaning. And what these are to me are bailouts. These are bailouts to banks that don't have the ability to meet their obligation, their obligations for liquidity. And I think it's certainly the Chinese have a curse. May you live in interesting times. These are undoubtedly rather interesting to see this happening right now. And, you know, in supposedly good times, what happens when things get not so good and the need for liquidity becomes really, really acute, I think you'll see things get really crazy. So certainly worth watching, no question about it.
In 2008, President Bush came on the television and told everybody, we had it go through Congress, and people panicked, and there was this big deal. This time, they're doing things as much as in 2008, it looks like, but it's all behind the scenes, and the media is not covering it. What do you think that indicates?
I think management of perception, management of perception economics, MOPE, as Jim Sinclair likes to call it. This is all about managing the psyche of the markets. They're very fragile right now. And if all of a sudden the Fed came out and said that, you know, the economy is under stress, the banking system is undercapitalized and running into problem, and we need to step in to bail out, after they were talking about austerity measures and tightening their balance sheets at the beginning of the year, to do a complete 180-degree turn and then to be concerned about it, I think would rattle the markets probably more than they would like. So I think it's about managing the perception of what's really happening, creating a perception of reality, I guess you could say, that allows them to tweak the system without creating chaos, without creating too much fear.
Now, what do you think of them telling everybody that the economy is okay and everything, and even behind the scenes, they know it's not? What are your thoughts on that? Do you feel that that's appropriate?
Well, I think I think that's just the way that it goes. You can take a look, you know, about the way that they've reclassified gold through the Basel III agreement. To me, it's very, very, very illuminating what's happening. And the big money has been well aware of what's going on, I think, for the past year and a half. When I say big money, I'm talking the central banks. The central banks have been repositioning themselves since the beginning of 2018 for whatever it is that's coming down the pike. And the big money is going to be the last ones to tell the public about it until they're positioned. Let me give you an example. The Basel III agreement, which Basel is the canton in Switzerland where the Bank of International Settlements is located. They are the central banker's central bank. They make all the rules for the banks. And they reclassified gold as a tier one asset as of April 1st of this year, meaning that it is now as good as yours. I'm going somewhere with this, and I'll get to your answer about the big money being disingenuous in their direction. But let's go back to the end of 2017. I believe the central bankers were informed that in 2019, gold would take on a new role as a tier one asset. In 2018, the central banks bought more gold than at any time in the last 55 years. And so far this year in 2019, those numbers are up by over 75%. Let me explain the significance of what this really means, and then you can kind of figure it out for yourself why they're being disingenuous. But suffice it to say, a tier three asset, which is what gold used to be, allowed the central banks to classify 50% on their balance sheet. That's it. So countries with less than pristine balance sheets would be de-incentivized to own gold. They would only be incentivized to own the one tier one asset, U.S. Treasuries and U.S. dollars. With the reclassification of gold as a tier one asset, and again, you don't hear anyone talking about this. It should be front and center, but no one's talking about it. The central banks realize that they have now been given an opportunity to de-dollarize. They have been given a vehicle that allows them to de-dollarize, and that is gold for the first time ever. Gold now takes a role as a tier one asset. Think about the PIGS nations, Portugal and Ireland and Greece and Spain. These countries would have had no incentive to own gold if 50% of what they owned on their balance sheet was not accounted for. It would denigrate their ability to write bonds or to transact international business. Now that it's been reclassified as of April 1st of this year as a tier one asset, banks are being incentivized to shed dollars and to accumulate precious metals. I think that the handwriting is on the wall. They see where we are heading. They see a country that is $22 trillion in debt officially, over $100 trillion in debt in terms of unfunded liabilities. They see the handwriting on the wall, I think. They see the political chaos. They see the geopolitical chaos. And they see, I think, for the first time ever, the real need to to de-dollarize. And I think that that's exactly what is happening by the most sophisticated traders on the planet. They are loading up on gold and they are selling dollars. Look at the Central Bank of Russia. They sold every treasury they own. They're the largest accumulators of gold on the planet this last year. But that is happening across the board. All of the central banks are de-dollarizing. And so I think that the big money, the last thing they want to do is be forthright about what's really happening until they've positioned themselves. They've positioned themselves out of the dollar.
Do you believe that these repo markets, these short-term loans, all these things, they're propping up the market, right? Does that indicate that the central banks are not ready? They're not positioned properly yet.
Absolutely. This is a high stakes game that's going to take a lot of time to be properly positioned. And I think the last thing that they want to do is disrupt the apple cart before they have positioned themselves. No question about it. Absolutely. 100%. I do believe that. Yes.
And let's get into JP Morgan, because we did a show a while ago about how JP Morgan was cornering the silver market. Where has that gone since we last spoke?
Well, they've amassed over 900 million ounces of silver. It's the largest physical position the world has ever seen. They've amassed over 25 million ounces of physical gold. And they've also been accused of racketeering. Three or four traders on their precious metals desk have been accused of RICO charges and for manipulating the spoofing the precious metals market. In fact, they have been called a criminal organization, their precious metals desk. And so yet they're continuing to do the exact same thing. Here again, you have the most sophisticated traders on the globe who have amassed literally the largest single position of silver the world has ever seen over the last 8 years, and an enormously large gold position, all along doing it illegally, spoofing the market, and four of their traders are facing RICO charges. So JP Morgan is without question the biggest manipulator on the market. They have amassed the largest physical position the world has ever seen. And for whatever reason, even though the Justice Department is pointing a finger at them, they have still been able to continue to manipulate the market through all of this. So it's really strange to me. I guess the only thing that makes sense is that they've been accumulating on behalf of a very large client. A couple of years ago, Blythe Masters, who ran their precious metals desk, and Jamie Dimon, both in separate interviews, came out and said that the metal that they have been accumulating is not for their own personal account. It is for a client. If I had to guess, that client's the Chinese Central Bank. The Chinese struck a deal with the U.S., said, you know, we see what you've been doing for a very long time in the metals market. We want to do the exact same thing. We won't dump all our treasuries. You'll allow us to continue to do it. Very little else makes sense when you see the admission of guilt by Bart Shilton, former CFTC commissioner who has since passed away, came out and said that he told his superiors that JP Morgan most certainly should have been prosecuted, that JP Morgan had been manipulating the market. You've seen the Justice Department come out and actually levy charges against them, and yet they continue to be able to rig the game. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense simply to say it's been happening. There's no question about it. And it must be a very high stakes player that they're accumulating all this for, because it doesn't make sense how they've been given a green light to completely violate antitrust law and even go as far as being accused of it and still continue the game.
Well, the central banks had a meeting back in August here in the United States. And one of the things that they proposed is to do a worldwide digital currency that they control and get to determine where the money goes above the governments. They want to have full control. Do you think that is something that they're going to end up getting the ability to do? And do you think this bizarre behavior is based on a global struggle against something like that?
Yeah, I mean, if you really want to have a new currency like that, a cryptocurrency controlled by the governments, a blockchain controlled by the governments, which is what they would like, absolutely. The only way to do that is to crash the system and to destabilize the system. And maybe that's exactly what they're doing. Maybe they're really trying to bring down the system and create a new one. Certainly they've squeezed as much debt out of the US dollar as they possibly can. So yeah, if they're trying to create a new system, one that is trackable, if you will, that's exactly what they would do, no question about it.
What do you think about the central bankers putting out a, they had a meeting in a central, let me start over. What do you think about the central banking annual meeting where they came up with a proposal to do a digital currency that is, that they control, that's worldwide, and then they, not only do they control it, they're saying that they are going to determine for the governments, so they're going to be above all governments, saying where they get to spend their money for their people. Do you think that that's something that is even, I mean, I would think the traders of every country would support that. I mean, do you think that is part of the weirdness that we're seeing going on all over?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It seems kind of contradictory in the respect that the central bankers create a decentralized platform that they control. The whole concept of a decentralized platform is to not have central control. But I don't, you know, you could look at the European Union as a failed example of how well people like to be told by a central authority how to run their affairs. Look at most of the European Union really doesn't like to be told by the German Bundesbank how to run their affairs or by Brussels. I think that in general, I don't think that that works. I do think that the central planners would like nothing more than to have a cryptocurrency that was administered, if you will, by the bankers, no question about it. But that flies in the face of the whole concept of a decentralized currency, one that usurps the banking community. But if I had to guess, yes, you will see some sort of a cryptocurrency, a Fed coin as an example, or some sort of a cryptocurrency administered by a government that will try to have it gain acceptance, a cashless society, if you will. Certainly that would eliminate a lot of the black market and a lot of the crime that goes on unaccounted for.
And taxes not being paid. Yeah. I mean, they can track every tax.
To me, that's really a scary reality, and I hope that we don't see it. But I think there's a greater chance of something like that happening than to see a true decentralized cryptocurrency gain acceptance as a medium of exchange. I think that would have a far, far greater uphill battle by the powers that be than the powers that be creating something that they pass off as decentralized.
And that's, I think that's the point. They're passing it off as decentralized because they didn't say a cryptocurrency, or they're not using the word decentralized cryptocurrencies. They're just saying a digital currency. It doesn't mean it's decentralized. It's completely centralized and trackable, and they just have their way of doing it. They're going to use blockchain in the wording, and they might start using the word cryptocurrency, but it's not going to be decentralized. That is for sure. I would bet everything I own on the fact that they wouldn't allow that to happen.
Right. It would be a permissioned only database of sorts, if you will, a permissioned only blockchain. So it would be very different than a completely decentralized blockchain like Bitcoin. I think that's not going to happen. I don't see that as being in the cards, at least anytime soon.
Well, let's talk about what people can do, because it is pretty scary, right? And, you know, I always tell people you have to have the basics, you have to have cash, you have to have gold, silver, whatever. What should people really have as this thing? I mean, because people are saying the end of 2020 or the end of 2019 is going to be rough, and we're seeing the indicators now. What should people have and be prepared for?
But look, when you see the most sophisticated traders on the planet, the commercial banks and the central banks, de-dollarizing, repositioning themselves into precious metals. I think the biggest question is not how much metal should we own, but what should our exposure be to a currency that is $140 trillion underwater? And a trillion seconds ago being 31,680 years ago. The numbers have gotten so big and so out of control that to not mitigate your exposure to the U.S. dollar right now, with all of this happening, at the same time we see the reclassification of gold as a tier one asset, for the first time giving another tier one asset opposite the U.S. Treasury market, when you see the most sophisticated traders on the globe repositioning into gold and out of dollars, that should be first and foremost. That number one, we need to mitigate our exposure to the dollar because the most sophisticated traders on the planet are doing so. Secondly, I think it's important to have metal at home, some anyway, that is small and easy to use and to trade with, namely 1/10 and 1/4 ounce American Gold Eagles and 1 ounce Silver Eagles or junk silver dimes and quarters. I think that's never a bad idea when you talk about the possibility of currency problem. God forbid we wake up to find OPEC make an admission that they're now accepting oil in euro, yuan, and ruble. If we saw that overnight, you'd see interest rates spike and the dollar start to absolutely crater. I think for larger purchases, the numismatic gold market, the $20 and $10 gold pieces, pre-33 U.S. gold coins, are the best value I've seen in my entire career, 30 years. I have never seen a better time ever to own these coins. They're being sold for less than gold eagles. I've never seen that in 30 years. I think it's the best value I've ever seen in my entire career.
And explain what they are.
Those are old U.S. gold coins that were legal tender prior to 1933. When President Roosevelt accepted office in April of 1933, his first act was to confiscate gold. So all of those coins minted prior to 1933 were confiscated and melted down. Many of them, however, escaped to European central banks. And those have come back over the last few decades, creating the market that we have in them here in the U.S. right now. They were legal tender prior to 1933. They are numismatic coins. They are coins where their value is attributed largely due to their age and their rarity. That's always been the case. And that's why a lot of people would say, don't buy them. They're too expensive. Well, right now, for the first time ever, that's not the case. And you're able to buy them for pretty darn close to their melt value in many cases. And I'm not being trite when I say, when I say to you it's the best value I've ever seen in 30 years, I'm dead serious. It really is. There's nothing quite like it. If I were looking to do anything in the gold realm, it would be buying the $20 and $10 pre-1933 gold pieces. In 2007, 8, and 9, when it was obvious in 2007 when Obama was taking office, and then through his first year and a half in office, I flew all around America buying all around the country, buying back people's numismatics and swapping them into bullion because the premiums were 60, 70, 80% above the price of gold, whereas now they're 2, 3, and 4%. Just like back then, the premiums were too high and I was imploring everyone to switch into gold bullion. This is the complete antithesis of that. These are the most affordable, most undervalued premiums I've ever seen. And quite frankly, I've been telling my clients to sell gold bullion and to trade into these numismatic coins because it's once in a generation opportunity. And I don't say that flippantly or lightly. I mean that dead serious. It is the best value in gold I've ever seen in over 30 years.
Now, do they come in smaller denominations versus an ounce?
They do. They come in a half ounce and quarter ounce. But as you go into the smaller pieces, you pay much higher premiums because if you go back 100 years ago when money really had value, $20 was an inordinately large amount of money at the turn of the century. And so they would have been used less frequently than a 10 or a 5, which would have been used in commerce much more often. So the smaller fractional pieces are often harder to come by. So yes, in the $10 gold piece, the value is just about the same. In the 5, you start to pay higher premium based on scarcity. But in the 10 and the $20 gold piece, the 1 and a half ounce gold piece, They are the best value I've ever seen ever in 30 years of business, no question about it.
So you could easily gain 50% just as it rebounds to what it should be.
Yeah, if all we saw happen was these coins go back to where they've traded for on average for the past 30 years, you're looking at easily 20%. I mean, they always traded at 15, 20, 25% above a gold eagle for an uncirculated $20 gold piece. And now they're the same price as a gold eagle for a 62 or a 63 grade. Same price, maybe $10 more. That's unheard of. Even in the midst of a bear market in the 90s, you were paying 20% more for a 62 grade $20 gold piece over a gold eagle. Well, that 20% back then may have only been 60 bucks with $300 gold, but the percentages were the same. And now the premiums are non-existent. And when you talk about real value, I've never seen a better value ever. And I think it dovetails nicely with the fact that when we talk about opportunity, again, I cannot underscore enough the Basel III implication. The rest of the world is now being incentivized to shed dollars. They're being incentivized to accumulate gold, and they've been given for the first time ever a vehicle to choose other than U.S. Treasuries. And I think that that is not something to sell short. I think you will see gold take on a whole new relevance over the next year or so by the most powerful and most influential traders on the planet. And I think that's exactly what your listeners should do to their own capacity. Start to de-dollarize. Start to shed their exposure to a currency that is ridiculously in debt. And the last time we talked about the assets that the U.S. owns. Remember that? The largest asset in the United States is student debt of $1.8 trillion. So we have $140 trillion in unfunded liabilities against a backdrop of $3.8 trillion in assets, of which the largest asset, 50%, is in student debt. So we are a country that has lost its asset base, one that is incredibly indebted, and the rest of the world, for the first time ever, has found a new alternative to the U.S. dollar and the U.S. Treasury market as a tier one asset, and that is gold, and that should not be underlooked. In fact, I think that is the most significant thing I've ever seen in 30 years of business. So when we look at numismatics as being so cheap, it's kind of the icing on the cake for me. It's a way to not only buy gold, to shed your exposure to dollars, to de-dollarize, to mitigate that reliance on the dollar, and put some of it into numismatic coins right now at premiums I've never seen in my whole career that would enable you to buy them for the same price as gold bullion. That is really an added kicker to de-dollarization. It gives you upside potential that we normally don't associate with gold investing.
So do you think that they did this? Well, there are a couple of reasons I would think, but the rest of the world does not want to be dependent on the United States. But is this also a strategy to slowly take down the United States economy? I mean, I would think that they knew that was going to happen.
I think they realize that we've already done a pretty good job of that on our own. We've laid the foundation for that on our own. And I think they're, you know, it's almost like the bankers are taking care of their own first. Because if we go back to 2018, they did not make the announcement that gold was going to be reclassified as a tier one asset publicly until 2019. But if you look at how much gold the central banks accumulated in 2018, I believe that the central bankers met in 2017 in Basel, and they said, you have a year and a half to get your house in order and start accumulating precious metals because we're going to reclassify it as a tier one asset April of 2019. Because the amount of gold they accumulated in 2018 was 55. They hadn't accumulated that much gold in the previous 55 years. And the numbers in 2019 are up 75% over 2018. So they obviously knew that this was happening, and they've been accumulating it for quite some time, much longer than before they announced their intentions of making gold a tier one asset. So yeah, I think that they realize the handwriting's on the wall, and they're taking care of their own first, the central bank community. They're allowing them to get their house in order, which is always the case. The big money is always positioned ahead of the curve and ahead of the crowd. And that's exactly what the most sophisticated, well-informed, well-funded traders on the globe are doing. They are positioning themselves ahead of the crowd. And to me, that's how you win. You don't do what they're saying, you do what they're doing. And there's no question that's exactly what's going on. They're repositioning ahead of everybody else.
Yeah, you have to do what they're doing, not what they're saying. That's why watching actions are so important. If you're just listening, if you're actually listening to people and not paying attention to their actions, you are going to be hosed. So how can people get hold of you? Because I know...
There's no question there. I'm sorry, there was a little pixelation there. They're giving us clues where they're going and what they're doing. And, you know, most people go through life saying, damn it, I knew I should have done that. You need to trust your gut and trust your eyes this time. Your eyes are telling you what's going on. Now you need to trust your gut and realize when you see the most sophisticated traders on the globe are mitigating their exposure to the dollar, that's exactly what we need to do. We can be reached at milesfranklin.com is our website. I can be reached at andy@milesfranklin.com directly, or 800-255-1129 is my direct dial. We are the a precious metals company in the state of Minnesota, Sarah. It's the only state in the country that regulates the industry. And it's a federally non-regulated industry similar to the Wild West, except in Minnesota. We are licensed, we are bonded, we are background checked annually. Every single year, every employee and principal in our company has to be background checked. We have continuing education and compliance and a seven-figure surety bond that no one else in the country has to maintain unless you're in the state of Minnesota. It means that you couldn't do business in this industry with anyone with a better reputation or safer than Miles Franklin. And certainly we appreciate being on the show with you and being associated with you and the messages you're trying to get out there. We couldn't be in more agreement with you if we tried.
Well, I appreciate it. It's so important that people get this information because they're not getting it anywhere else. So that's why I really love talking to you. You have a perception and a view of global economics that, I mean, frankly, people need to hear this. So I just so much appreciate it. And thank you so much for joining the program.
We love being here, Sarah. I do personally, and I'll always come back when you need me. So stay warm and have a good one, and hope to talk to you soon.